This is KHSU.
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 Art Waves. Humboldt State University Department of Theater, Film, and Dance will present Stephen Karam and P.J. Paparelli's Columbinus for two weekends in December in Gist Hall Theater. Performances Friday and Saturday, December 2nd and 3rd, and then Thursday, December 8th through Saturday, December 10th. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. There will be one matinee performance at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 11th. The April 1999 massacre at Columbine High School in Colorado sparked debate about high school culture, alienation, hostility, bullying, and gun control laws. The play's authors have structured the play as a mixture of fact and fiction. Act One follows the lives of eight teenage archetypes. The second act focuses on details of the Columbine massacre, including facts taken from perpetrators Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris's videos and personal journals. The HSU production is directed by HSU theater professor Troy Lesher, who is one of my guests. Also here are two of the actors, Mickey Donovan, an HSU freshman, and Heather Carnes, a senior. Heather, you play one of those archetypes, and who are you?
I play the archetype rebel, which is that gothic emo punk kind of girl, like one of the outcasts, and she's just like, she keeps to herself. She doesn't have many friends, and she dresses in like all black. She likes experimenting with like artsy stuff, like hair color or whatever. But yeah, she's just very unique. Yeah.
And when I think of the word archetype, I also don't really think of interaction between people. I think of ideas rather than people interacting in mm-hmm. everyday conversation, whatever that is. Does your character interact with others?
She does, yes. But it's not very often. Not very often.
So we'll get into that with Troy talking. Troy, I want to talk to Mickey too, but Troy, how are you demonstrating or staging that interaction with your archetypes?
Sure. So I guess I should preface this by saying that the playwrights have used these archetypes to inspire a dialogue or to motivate a dialogue about teenagers. And these are individuals you'll probably see at every single high school and anywhere in the country today. So in terms of their interaction, it's a bit scattered. There are scenes that are indeed in the classroom, even though, you know, 5, 6, 7 of the archetypes are in the same classroom. The way I've staged it is there is definitely space in between their seats. They're not very close with each other. There are scenes, each of the archetypes have their own inner monologue moments that happen through the course of the play. There are some scenes where archetypes interact and build friendships, and there are scenes where the archetypes interact and there's bullying taking place. There are interactions in the lunchroom. There are interactions in the locker room. There are interactions at the workplace. One of the archetypes works at a pizza parlor. And then there is this sort of interesting interactions when it comes to the fantasy of some of these archetypes, where each of the archetypes play a role in the fantasy of certain archetypes. So it's actually very scattered and quite complicated when these archetypes come together.
Mm-hmm.
Did the it was a Stephen Karam mm-hmm. and P.J. Paparelli.
That's correct.
Co-wrote this. Did they take some of the exchanges, the dialogue, from fact, from documents?
Yes. So in addition to these two gentlemen, there was a dramaturg who conducted extensive research. A lot of the play is based upon firsthand accounts. A lot of it is based upon some of the writings of the characters. Also, a lot of the action in the play is based upon real incidents that happened to the two characters, Dylan and Eric.
Even in Act One, then, some of the words we're hearing are words that were in documents, I don't know, collected by police or teachers before and following the incident?
Yes. Especially in Act One, a lot of the incidents that occur in Act One are based upon real situations that happened to Dylan and Eric in particular. Act Two becomes much more specific about firsthand account, news stories, police reports, investigation reports, etc.
And Mickey, what is the archetype that you portray?
I portray the freak of the school, the kid who doesn't really talk much but has occasional outbursts of anger and emotion and frustration, and nobody really understands him because he's always inside of his own head, and he has a lot of trouble communicating that and reaching out to people for help, so he just buries it inside himself and he gets labeled a freak for it.
And how does Troy's direction help you find this character?
Tremendously. We've had like a lot of conversations about how each character can somehow relate to me as a person, and it makes it a lot more real. He really forces you to go deeper than the lines and to put yourself in the character's shoes and live the life that they were living and go through the struggles that they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that's one thing I often tell student actors, you have to fall in love with your character.
Yeah.
No matter how flawed they are as individuals, no matter how evil you might think they are, at the end of the day, you have to embrace them. And then when we go on stage, we have to figure out a way to get the audience to empathize with them, too, for dramatic effect, usually. It's not always so easy to do, that's for sure.
So it sounds like in finding the archetypes, in finding the personalities inside the archetypes, it sounds like both you, Mickey, and Heather participated actively in finding these people inside of you.
Dr. Troy had us do several assignments with character work, and that has tremendously helped find our characters and go past the lines of the script. Like, one of my favorite assignments that we've done was we had to get pictures of what we think our character's room would look like, what we would find in their room, whether it would be clean or messy, what type of artwork, any band posters, any of that. But the different assignments for our characters have really helped and shaped us.
Mm-hmm. And I should just add, one of the reasons I had the student actors take on that assignment is because each of the archetypes, you know, they find respite by going back into their bedrooms and disconnecting from the rest of the world. And you have to remember, this is the late 90s and that teen angst and what that was about. So it was important to me that each of the actors, they have a visual image of what their bedrooms look, each of these characters' bedrooms look like. How would they decorate their walls? Because that's their safe place. That's the place they can go to be themselves and not be judged. It's a place to go where they can avoid some of that pressure that they might find on a daily basis when they go to school.
I was thinking a couple of things while you were talking. One, I was wondering if the character of the rebel and the character of the freak, do they interact?
Not freak and rebel, I don't think. I know that the rebel interacts with my best friend in the play, who is labeled a loner. I think they have a little romance going.
Freak and Rebel have a few moments inside the classroom. during Act One. They may have a little interaction at the pizza parlor too, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, they're brief.
Yeah,
I'll be a brief.
And then we're going forward into the second act. And the only thing I know about this is that the second act contains details of the actual massacre, the real life event, and from facts actually taken from the perpetrators' videos and personal journals, approaching and including the shootings and then the suspects' suicides. This is actual material. But are we still in the second act? What role are our archetypes playing with it? Because this is very full, just as it is from what I've described.
Sure. So six of the eight archetypes, they sort of become neutralized in Act Two, and they become narrators in the story. Act One wraps up in a way that we sort of say goodbye to those, to the six archetypes. The other two archetypes, they go on to more of a journey and more of an evolution, moving more into the specific, and they actually move from being an archetype to indeed the names of the two shooters that day. So Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris evolve out of the Freak and Loner.
What I would ask is if indeed Mickey, your character, the Freak, does evolve in ultimately into one of the shooters, I'd want you to talk about how that journey has been for you.
Personally?
Yeah, personally, as an actor portraying this and then going so deep into the actual factual material.
Yeah, when I first started on this character, it didn't really occur to me what a real person this was. And the more and more I dove into it, the more is just kind of scaring me almost. And I would leave every day with just this residue of hatred. And but yeah, I actually took advantage of the counseling program that was assigned to Columbinus. So I got to go in every week, and we talked a lot about how it's just a mask that you put on, and you take it off at the end of day. But it's just hard because for 3 hours in the day, I'm an absolute monster. And then I have to somehow transform back into my normal self to live, you know, the normal college life. And so that's been kind of difficult on me. But I found a balance of, and realization that this isn't real, you know. And I'm doing my best to make this mask as real as possible, but at the same time, not let it get into me.
Mickey Donovan. Also here is Heather Carnes. Both HSU students are part of the cast of Columbinus, which opens December 2nd in Gist Hall Theater. Also here is the play's director, Troy Lesher. And I'm Wendy Butler. And you are listening to Art Waves. And this is KHSU. One of the things that you said, Troy, in the promotion for this was you believe that people should see the play because it invites audiences to carefully consider today's teenagers and the true life realities and pressures they unfortunately have to confront. What I thought of, and I wanted to ask Mickey and Heather about this, what I thought of is, okay, the pressures teenagers face today, well, I faced a certain number of pressures and sadness and anger and just the wealth of emotions when I was a teenager. So how is it different today? I wanted Troy to talk about this, but I want first Heather and Mickey. What are your feelings? I mean, you're in college. You're a freshman. Okay, Mickey, how old are you now?
I'm 18 years old.
Okay, well, you're still a teenager.
Yep.
So what's different today about pressures?
Well,
in your opinion?
There's still a lot. High school still sucks. but no, I think there's always just that pressure that you need to fit in and you need to be accepted by everybody. And that drives people crazy. It drove me crazy. So I think that's, I don't know. I don't know what high school was like back in your guys' heyday.
Yeah, but.
Wow.
Okay, well then, well, there was no social media.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's actually really important. Sort of how we construct our identity and how we live a lot of our life online these days. The use of technology in our lives are definitely, it was different than when I was in high school in the early 90s. So I think those are some different factors that young people have to navigate today. You know, what do you do with an online, you establish an online personality, and it's easy for others to go on your Facebook page and say things about you. And so that's just an interesting way of interacting and, again, doing perception management. I also think, or I wonder, I don't know for sure, about academic and success, you know, academic pressure to be academically successful. Academically. You have to edit that word out. Pressure to be successful with your academics, and also the emphasis on career, professional success, to me seems to be a bit more than it was when I was in high school. I mean, I think my parents wanted me to do well, but I worry that young folks today have a bit more pressure when it comes to going to college and the cost of going to college and what it takes to have you know, a salary to, you know, to live, you know, to be financially secure. So there's a lot there. Sorry, yeah.
Heather, how about you? Pressures.
Do you want me to answer as if I were a teenager now, or when I was a teenager?
How old are you now?
I'm 23, almost 24.
As a teenager, what you recall from being a teenager, getting through it?
In high school, like in middle school, I was going through like phases like rebel, actually. So that was fun to connect with. But in high school, there's pressures of, academics, like teachers, and then I feel like there was like some competition with your other classmates, like who did better on a test and all that terrible stuff. And then there's always like the pressure of parents, because you want to make them happy and you want to make them proud of you, but you know, sometimes stuff happens and you don't make them very proud of you. And then trying to figure out what you want to do with your life, whether you join the military or you go to college or you just are a dropout or you play video games and smoke all day. You know, it's like it's a lot. High school was a time. Yeah.
Well, and I would say, I remember when I started high school in 1990 or 1991, I remember my father telling me, these are going to be the best years of your life. Mm. And you know what? I actually really enjoyed my high school experience. I had a good group of friends. I was into the arts. I was into choir and band and theater. And I just felt connected. I had a great support system. I'm not so sure that's still the case with a lot of folks today. I would like to think it is, but I remember at our first rehearsal, I went around the room and I said, how many folks in here, raise your hand if high school was a very positive experience? And I think it was a little under half actually raised their hand. So there were more folks in the room that felt that their high school experience, and these are college students who have just got out of high school in the past few years, was not a very pleasant experience. And I guess the other thing I should mention there, in the sentence on the press release there, I think one thing I think about is what future means. When I was in high school, I mean, the future was bright and there's all this opportunity and I was thinking about college and what I wanted to do. But given, you know, aspects of our world that seem to change so quickly now, you know, in the play, there are several times where characters say, how can I think of the future when I'm just trying to survive the present? And I think that that is very different than the lens through which I saw it when I was in high school. I didn't wake up every day worried whether or not I was going to survive the next day. I was very much forward thinking post-high school.
Yeah, I definitely think that the pressure has changed a lot, but I still think the archetypes that we were talking about, they haven't changed, and people are still so quick to label people off the way they look. And I don't think that'll change for a long time.
Is that, would you say, Troy, as director, what you want the audience to take with it from this play, would you say it's an appreciation? That's what you were saying with this, an appreciation of what teenagers went through years ago but are going through now.
Sure. I think that I'm 40 years old. I think I need to be very, very careful about projecting my high school experience onto young people today. Everyone has a different high school experience. I think we need to remember that. And, you know, I think the archetypes that folks will see, I hope that they sort of see their own high school experience through those archetypes because, as Mickey said, those really haven't changed so much. We still have the jock. We still have the AP or the nerdy student around. We still have the preppy guy. We still have Perfect, who's beautiful and attractive, very popular. I think this play is actually going to be really powerful for folks who are just out of high school or folks who've been out of high school for a while.
You said there's humor in it.
Oh, absolutely.
One would not think when we're talking about that there's humor in it.
Right.
In what way is there humor?
Well, Stephen Karam, who one of the playwrights, he actually just won the Tony Award this year for the play called The Humans. And indeed, he writes dark comedies. You know, you find yourself laughing at some pretty serious serious issues. So a lot of the interactions in Act One between the characters are very humorous and ridiculous. One of the characters, you know, her job is to give tours to middle schoolers, you know, as a service to the school. And it's just absurd and ridiculous how excited she is to show the audience, this is our cafeteria, and we're proud of it. And down the hall is our gym, and you got to see the gym. And so there's a little example of how there could be some absurdity, and even though this play is actually very, very, you know, tackles some very serious issues.
Would you say our culture today, whether having to do with social media or not, would you say it's become more violent?
We certainly hear more news stories of violent activities. I don't think I was ever scared to go to school when I was in high school. That might be something that, you know, Mickey or Heather can address. I don't recall feeling unsafe very much, even when I lived in New York City. I don't know, that's a great question, Wendy. I'm not sure I have a good answer for it.
I don't think it has. I don't think it's become more violent. I think people are a lot more afraid now because of the, you know, expansion of social media, and all these stories get out and they glorify them so much that people are, they're afraid. So, I mean, there's certainly still aspects of violence, of course, but I don't think as much.
I kind of feel like there has always been that level of violence, but with social media, it's just now out there for us to see, like with cyberbullying. And I think it was last week I read an article somewhere about how there was this young high school couple that committed suicide, and they did something on their Facebook pages right before they... Yeah, and so... Yeah, I just feel like the violence has always been there. I don't know what level that violence is at, but it's always been there. But with social media, it's just now pronounced, which is really sad.
You know, earlier this year, Sue Klebold was on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And, you know, she remarks that, you know, if she could go back, she wishes she would have been a better communicator to really dig deep and see what was going on, that people are good at masking things. They're great at sort of covering up what's really lurking beneath the surface. And so that's one of the reasons why I really enjoyed, not that I enjoyed this play, but I wanted to bring this story to life, because this sort of tells the other narratives that are going on among high school students that maybe American Graffiti or Breakfast Club maybe doesn't go into as deep.
I'm going to go with the quote. You go from the quote that you put in here. Thornton Wilder said, we live in what is, but we find 1,000 ways to not face it. Theater strengthens our faculty to face it.
I think that every story deserves to be told, no matter the gruesomeness or the horror. And yeah, Columbine is, like you said, it's so great because in the theater, it's so personal. And this story has never been personal. And just now we're getting into this beautiful, I know that's not a good word to, or it's not the most commonly heard word when you talk about Columbinus, but it's just, it's not talked about. And this play talks about everything that wasn't talked about when in Columbine.
Well, the beauty is in the art.
Yes, exactly.
That you're exhibiting. Go ahead, Heather.
I wanted Rebel so bad. That was the all of the four plays we did on our like big audition day. That's the only role and the only play I wanted. And if I didn't get it, I still wanted to be a part of it because this is a documentary play about something real. And I've been advertising to friends and family about it, and it has actually really shocked me about how many people really don't know anything about the Columbine shooting. And I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about it until this experience, but I think we have something really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to do this. This play needs to be done by young people, told through the lens of young people. And, you know, choosing a play like this for university students, it's amazing how much this play resonates with their world and their perspective. I mean, I'm a big fan of having family shows and musicals and classical works. And I think it's important, though, now and then we sort of blow the doors off it and do something that's heavy. And it's really going to move an audience by the end of the 2 hours.
Troy Lesher, director of Humboldt State University Department of Theater, Film, and Dance's production of Columbinus. Also here have been two of the actors, Mickey Donovan and Heather Carnes. Columbinus in Gist Hall Theater. Performances are Friday and Saturday, December 2nd and 3rd, and then Thursday, December 8th through Saturday, December 10th. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. There will be one matinee performance at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 11th. HSU students are admitted free. For tickets, phone 826-3928. For more information, you can phone 826-3566. The production is recommended for ages 16 and older due to adult content and language. Following the weekend performances, HSU Counseling and Psychology Services staff psychologist Dr. Craig Beeson will lead discussions on Mondays, December 5th and 12th, 6:30 to 8 p.m., on the HSU campus that are open to the public and HSU students, staff, and faculty. This is an opportunity to explore thoughts and reactions stimulated by the performance of Columbinus. The December 5th discussion is in Nelson Hall East 113, and the one on December 12th is in Nelson Hall East 106. Thank you for listening. Art Waves is produced for KHSU at Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler, and I produce, engineer, and host Art Waves, and invite you to listen to the regular broadcasts each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Or you can listen to the program live or to archived episodes on our website at khsu.org.
There is a group of young Chinese who love music as their manner of expression. They find love in adversity and in dedication. They represent dramatic, living love.
Hi, I'm Jacob Sweden. Listen to my show every Tuesday night from 10 to midnight. Los Ensemble Economique, The Value Pack.
Listener-supported diverse public radio for the north coast of California and the south coast of Oregon. This is KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5, Arcata, KHSR 91.9, Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9, Garberville. You can also hear KHSU in Willow Creek, 99.9, on translator K260BQ, and in Ferndale at 88.7, translator K204GA.